You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Next up is the soundtrack from a short Vimeo film created by Sarah Penryn-Jones for the Wales Literature Exchange. The voice you hear is climate fiction author Lloyd Jones, speaking from his boyhood farm.
My book is called Adore, The Water. It's about the possible effects of global warming. It is set in the future, possibly in 100 years' time, and it portrays a rural community fighting for its existence after society has broken down. Also, there is a simple love story in it, but there is no happy ending. Ydwr, deg iar, saith buwch, dwy gath, un biarth, bedwar bedd. Dyma galon yr ein fferm. 10 hens, 7 cows, 2 cats, 1 farm, 4 graves. Here, at the centre of the old homestead, the farmyard opens in front of us like the palm of a hand. A work-worn hand with blisters and calluses and scars. This is where the life of the farm is staged every day. The very first act began here many centuries ago. We Welsh people, how many of us started our lives in a place like this, still in our nappies? I was born on this remote farm in Wales nearly 60 years ago, and I had a strange childhood. Rather brutal, really, living alone with an alcoholic father. And one of my escapes was to go wandering around the farm on my own. And since then, I've always loved nature, and I've always loved wandering. And in fact, in the last 8 years, I've walked completely around Wales, 1,000 miles, and I've also walked across Wales 9 times. I love nature, and that's really what got me thinking about global warming and its possible effects on the world, particularly my own little patch of it. On my walks, I started talking to people, and I was surprised at the number of people who actually had a deep-seated worry about what was happening to the world, how we were polluting it and causing mayhem with overpopulation and other things. And so I decided to write a book about it from my own angle as a Welsh person, living in a small country which can't really do that much about it. As many other parts of the world can't, the small islands of the Indian Ocean at the moment, which are disappearing, parts of Bangladesh, all having troubles already. When I grew up on this farm in the 1950s, we lived a very simple life. Water from the well, no electricity, very simple food. And I think people nowadays have no idea the luxury in which they lived, all the food they can get, Tesco's, wherever, and they have no idea how difficult it would be to sustain themselves if something happened to that food chain. And the book tries to portray the fight the people have to try and make enough food for themselves, to the extent that by the end they have to rely on simple food of potatoes and turnips, and they sicken of that even. In 2001, as a result of alcoholism and work stress, I came apart completely. And I lost everything except for my life. I eventually turned yellow and ended up in hospital, nearly dead. During that year, I encountered psychiatric units. I lived rough, and I felt very much an outsider in society, and that gave me an insight into what it was like, really, for my own characters in the book, when society had broken down completely.
Radio EcoShock welcomes author and Welsh wanderer Lloyd Jones. Hello, Lloyd.
Hello there.
Your short film on Vimeo about your life and work touched me on several levels, Lloyd. In some ways, it captures a bit of my own journey and this program. Let's start with this. Many of my listeners will not really know where Wales is or what it's like. Can you give us a little snapshot of the place?
Of course. Wales is part of the United Kingdom. It's amazing how few people have heard of it. It's a principality that makes it part of the UK, but it is a separate country with its own language. About 500,000 people speak Welsh, and it's a very distinct, separate culture. It's a very beautiful country, actually, very green, rolling hills, very agricultural, with the sea never very far away. So it's also a tourist destination as well.
Lloyd, getting right to it, you say your own breakdown gave you a vision of the fragility of modern life. Tell us about that.
Well, that makes me sound a little bit cranky, but it was a time when I had I could reflect on the state of the world. I just walked a lot. I walked completely around my country, a journey of 1,000 miles, whilst also raising a couple of kids and doing other things. But I had plenty of time to think, and friends were leaving me their newspapers, and I was reading a lot, and I just realized how many stories there were in the papers about some sort of climate change. And I became intrigued by it, read a bit, and decided to write a book from a Welsh angle, what might happen in Wales should the very worst happen.
Before we get to the climate change part, I want to say that, like you, I've lived without electricity, and I tried hard to produce most of my own food, and it's very, very tough to do that. And I came away thinking the farmers before me, with their 16 kids, they were giants. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, certainly. But we knew no different, because that was the world, so we didn't miss it because we'd never had electricity. And my father actually constructed a primitive system with a turbine in the end, and we were seen as pioneers. We were world beaters. There was no bathroom or anything like that. We took water from the well. It seemed all very natural at the time, and I can't remember any feeling of poverty. We had food, we had dry beds, and if you don't know difference, well, that's fine, isn't it? But I think an awful lot of people in the modern world might find it very difficult.
Yeah, you know, we go to a supermarket now and we find maybe 100 vegetables and 1,000 choices. What makes you think that could come undone again one day?
We certainly are spoiled. In the Western world, we have lived with riches for some time now. Well, I think the overarching problem really is world population, because at 7 billion and counting, with a projection of, 9 billion in 20 years' time. As human beings, we're really quite toxic. We leave a lot of waste behind us, but we're also rapacious. We take up an awful lot of resources, food resources, mineral resources, etc. And with that sort of level of population, we're just going to denude the world, aren't we? We're rapidly doing it at the moment. That means that things will become difficult to obtain or very expensive. It's only logical at some stage or another, and it's happening slowly all through the world at the moment, people will start having to fight more for food. And indeed, I'm led to believe that part of the problem in Africa, say the Sudan at the moment, is based on resources dwindling. So it is becoming, it's already becoming a problem.
Why did you title your novel with the Welsh word for water?
Well, in Welsh it's actually called y dŵr, which is the water. And that alludes to the body of water which is slowly forming at the foot of the farm, and that is also a metaphor for, you know, climate change, for global warming. It's just a metaphor for the change in the valley brought on by different climate.
It seems a little odd in this green land of Wales, as you say, for you to become concerned about global warming. Can you tell us more about what your concerns are?
Well, I'm just a normal person. I'm not a messianic person or anything like that. I have a normal brain, and I read about these things happening. Just thought, well, I'll pen a book which might sort of capture it from a local angle. If something does happen, which is possible, it's certainly not probable, you know, that this terrible scenario might happen. And I just wanted to put it from a Welsh angle, that's all. But that was quite easy to picture, because I was brought up on a very poor farm, and it was easy to see what might happen if people just didn't have that flow of food and resources any longer, when they actually had to battle with their own hands for food from the land. There was a time, say, after the Russian Revolution, when people could still do it. They could turn to the land and grow their own food very quickly, because that tradition, that experience was still there. But it's gone now, and I think that people would find it terribly hard. Possible. I mean, people like the Cubans do grow an awful lot of food around them. But for most people, especially in the Western world now, we'd become very spoiled, very lazy, and we'd find it very difficult.
Well, an agribusiness has taken over everything. We let big corporations produce our food, and they adulterate our food, and it's not very healthy for us. So we've become addicted to factory food, I would say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can see that. I've seen that firsthand, because the farm is still in our family. And when I was a little boy on the farm, it was just thrown together thing. They grew things, they were animals, but it was all very amateurish by modern standards. Certainly, there was no technology, and we had a little primitive tractor, but it was all completely different to now, when huge machines with very little manpower, with they're using high nitrates and all sorts of other chemical compounds, really use the land on an industrial level. And people just don't realize they still think of farms as little chucky chicken places with little lambs frolicking around. They don't realize that the average small farm, even here in Wales, has a huge turnover every year and is now a business rather than a little place with somebody dithering around with a pitchfork all day. They're big businesses now. And if that failed, and I mean, that's a problem at the moment with chemical prices for fertilizers. If that starts becoming a problem, then that sheer volume of food won't be possible. Of course, other people will say, well, GM cropping will come in and solve the problem. But what I say to that is, yes, it'll solve it short term. But all that will happen is that for 20, 30 years, world population will grow to catch up with GM cropping and represent the problem in another 30 years with a world population of 10 billion. And the same problem will then become much worse, if you understand what I mean.
I'm sorry, I missed one word in what you said. What sort of cropping?
GM cropping.
Oh, yeah. Genetically modified foods. Just what we need. Well, look, as you say in your Vimeo presentation, it's not like Wales can really affect this path towards a new and unknown climate. In your travels, do you talk to people in your countryside? Are they aware of this? What do they say about climate change?
I'm a very talkative person, and I have a chat with everybody on the way. And it became quite clear to me that for most people, especially people of my generation, it's there as a lurking cloud. They're aware of the problem. And I don't know how many people of my age have turned around to me and said, of course, we saw the best of it, didn't we? It's not going to be anywhere near as good for the succeeding generations in the near future anyway. And that is a pervading atmosphere amongst my generation. I think that's also the common worldview, that the Western world has reaped the benefits of half a century of continual growth and great financial success for 50 years, which has been unsustainable. The capitalist model, although it's been very beneficial, and I'm certainly benefited from it, is actually very toxic. And it's probable that it'll be a slow but steady decline now in standards of living in the West.
I agree with you. I do.
Yeah, well, it looks likely anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I was in India a few years ago. I was there for quite a bit and travelled a bit, with 500 million people living in dire poverty. And I thought, could this ever happen in Britain? And I thought, well, you know, given 100 years of the downturning circumstances and the ever-increasing population, it's not impossible, because when you have that sort of population and that sort of lack of education, then everything's possible, and people have to fight for the next bowl of rice. We just don't know how good we've had it in the West.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, talking with Welsh novelist Lloyd Jones about his book set in a world made harsher by climate disruption. Lloyd, in your travels, are you encountering people organizing to live differently, say in transition towns, cooperative farms, or with self-sufficiency?
No. No, I'm not. Quite distinctly not. Although I detect a mood amongst the young of alternative living, in that they've seen the present model and they've seen the possibility that they can't do anything politically. I seem to think that they regard the political state differently to us. When I was a young person, a student, there was not a revolutionary fervor, but we believed we could change things. We believed in the political system as it is. But I think young people feel quite differently. They see it as a huge concrete block which they can't do anything about except circumvent. So that's what they're doing. They're living their own life, often in relative poverty. They're on minimum wages, but they're living life on a different, more personal level in their own little communities, involving usually a bit of hash, some music, and they're just saying goodbye to the world. We can't change you. We'll just live as we're living. That's the general mood I catch anyway.
Now, the title of your novel is, how would you pronounce it?
Odur.
Odur, and it's spelled Y-D-W-R, right?
That's right.
Okay. Now, in that, there is a role for women, but not necessarily for happy endings, as you tell us. Talk to us about the lead woman in this imaginary future.
Well, the heroine, as it were, is Mary, and she's a young girl who falls in love with this young Polish lad who comes really as a salvation to them on the farm. It's also a love story, a very strong love story, but I was determined not to give the book a happy ending, an artificial happy ending. I thought, I'm going to be true to the subject matter and say, right, I'm not going to write in that it'll be all right on the night. It ends badly for everybody. And I thought that's the spirit of the book. That's the basic truth I'm trying to say. Look, we're immersed now in a virtual world. We're really spending more and more time in computers. There's me sitting in front of a computer. And more time in front of televisions. And we're not actually looking at reality very often. That is nature of man. And that is my own nature as well. I just spent a lot of time in fantasy. But unless we do look up, there's a possibility, you know, that everything will just run out of control. And I think that far greater brains than I have said this. People like David Attenborough in this country, who just say, listen, we really have got to do something before it's too late, although I think personally it is too late.
How connected are you to the Internet? Do you have a website, a Facebook page, a Twitter account?
I haven't, no. I use the Internet a lot. Thank God for Google. Google's wonderful. But no, I haven't got anything like that. I'm not heavily into publicity, to be honest with you. I'm just a little bloke. I'm retired now. I've got my bus pass, and I spent the day very, very happily just walking about, writing a little. I'm just an ordinary person, just making the most of his retirement.
Still, though, Lloyd, I'm struck by the gulf of difference between most of our listeners and your own life. You must have time, perhaps too much time, to think as you encounter more people.
Yeah.
Do you feel there really are outsiders as such, or have we all become outsiders from both nature and our own natural selves?
Well, for the first time in the history of mankind last year or the year before, the balance of population change from being a world population being largely rural to largely urban. And as we well know, there are floods of people moving towards a city, largely caused by some sort of climatic change, like the Peruvian uplands being a very good example. More and more people will have to go to the favelas, to the slum towns of the cities to sustain some sort of living. Certainly, we're leaving the countryside, and people have got absolutely no idea what the countryside's about, by and large. We have a tract of hills at the back here behind me, a Cadneddau, and I can walk there all day and not see a single soul. People will be sitting in front of their televisions, basically. People just think of nature as something romantic they see on television with nice little animals, but they have no idea about the realities of it outside.
Well, Lloyd Jones, if listeners in the United States or Canada or Australia want to get your novel, is there a way for them to buy it?
On Amazon, presumably. I think Amazon.
Oh, it is on Amazon.
It's on Amazon UK, anyway. I don't think it's arrived in the States yet. I published this book with a small Welsh printing house. It's not on Kindle yet, but it will be soon, I think. But certainly it's on Amazon UK.
Now, I've been sort of prodding into your life and mind, almost in a rude way. Is there a question you would like to ask me or another thing that you would like to say as we finish up?
I'd love to come to Canada. That would be nice. I remember applying for passage over to Canada when I was a very young man, but I was refused. They'd obviously spotted I was a bad one then. But it looks absolutely magnificent country. Yes, I'd love to come there one day.
Well, if you do, come and visit.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. And likewise here. If you're anywhere near a village called Abergwyngregin, it's near Bangor, come in. I've got a bed for you here you'll stay with. You know, come and stay.
Well, I've got a recording of you saying that, so I may very well do it.
You're very welcome, really.
From the Western Highlands of the United Kingdom, we've been talking with Welsh storyteller and novelist Lloyd Jones about his cli-fi novel, if I could call it that, and much more than that. And it's called Y Dŵr. It means water. Find links to it in my EcoShock blog. And also to the gorgeous Vimeo by Sarah Penryn-Jones, made for the Wales Literature Exchange and set in Lloyd's boyhood farm. Thank you for sharing a bit of your life and work with us, Lloyd.
Well, thank you for phoning me. It's been really nice.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.